Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking at newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, we'll be looking at the reality of living with bipolar disorder. Our Therapy from the Couch session with therapist Fiona Brennan is looking at people-pleasing. And we'll be finding out how fashion is helping fund cancer research. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, it's actually been quite a whirlwind since we last spoke. I've been to France, surprised my brother, along with my sister who is home from the States. I have returned to the land of toddlers with her kids, my niece and nephew. And you know what? It's been so nice to be back at the playground stage. Out in the trees, the weather has definitely been helping. Pushing a swing, stopping for juice. I mean, I've asked myself, did I enjoy it as much as I should have when it was my own kids? And look, most of the time I did, but it has been so nice to be back. Car seats, chats, playing doggy, the simple pleasures in life. And this Paddy's Day was the first time in a long time that we didn't chase a parade somewhere. We just hung out in the garden. We searched for leprechauns. We ate Christmas dinner because my sister who lives in America didn't get to do that at Christmas. And yeah, just embracing the really simple things in life. Not that prepping for that dinner was simple, my mum will say, but you know what I mean? Fresh air, family and fun. And that's been amazing. And I really feel like I needed it. I've been stuck in a rut of late. I feel like a change is coming on, a transition of sorts. And I'm sure I've shared this with you before because it's one of my favourite stories, but it's the metaphor my son's junior infants teacher shared with me. She left teaching and now goes off and does healing and women's circles and all that side of things. So she was always in that realm. And she was talking about having a butterfly net in the classroom to show the kids the transition from caterpillar to chrysalis to butterfly. And she noticed a butterfly was starting to break free. So she called all the tots around and she said she thought it was going to be something beautiful to watch, but it was actually quite harrowing. The butterfly was struggling, bleeding, getting stuck in the chrysalis, and it was taking quite a long time to emerge. So the metaphor that she used based on that experience is that change can be messy. It can be painful. And I think I might have been there lately. I'm doing my best to sit with it, figure it all out, feel that positivity is coming at the end. I mean, I don't think there's any drastic change coming necessarily. I'll keep my husband and my kids and I will be still showing up here weekly if you'll have me. But I'm kind of half hanging out of a chrysalis and I'll let you know if any wings appear. You can email the show aliveandkicking at newstalk.com. Now, ARC Cancer Support Centres aim to provide psychological, emotional, practical and educational support to people with cancer and those who care for them. Virginia Kerr is psychotherapist with ARC and she joins me on the line now. Virginia, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Claire.
Tell me a little bit about your work.
Well, I think it's very important work because I've been at ARC for a long number of years now, but I think ARC is a place where the emotional side of cancer is taken care of. And I think a lot of the time when you're busy doing your hospital appointments and the practical side, you know, the physical side, as we call it, one forgets that there is an emotional side. And even sometimes the clients forget that there is an emotional side to cancer as well. And that's where ARC comes in, because we're here to be able to hold that space for people to talk about emotionally what it's like.
So what are the sort of things that you would hear from people?
I think a lot of the time at the beginning, it's the shock of maybe a diagnosis. And that can be for the family or it can be, you know, we also have family members, obviously, as well. So but for the client themselves, it can be the shock. It can be there's a lot of grief attached to a cancer diagnosis or any life-changing diagnosis. And again, people don't sort of see it like that, but grief, they associate grief with bereavement. But grief can be a loss of anything. It can be a loss of a job, a way of life, a relationship, whatever. And of course, life changes very much when you have a cancer diagnosis and you have a lot of, you know, the hospital stuff to go through, and it, you know, you might have to take time off work or whatever, and all the treatment. So, you know, that can be a big loss of your way of life, and also a loss around maybe the confidence in health, which comes back But it's normal to sort of feel that loss at the beginning.
And what about families and loved ones then? Because, you know, it is very difficult. A lot of the attention understandably goes to the person with the diagnosis, but it ripples out and affects everyone.
Oh, it does. And that's why here, like if I'm seeing a client who is the diagnosed person, their partner or spouse or a sibling or a parent can come in here, or child, or well, but, you know, adult child can come in here and be seen by another therapist. They won't be seen by me because I'm working solely with the client. We also have the client program for children. So we cover all aspects of the emotional side of cancer for a family. So, you know, it can be sometimes people, you know, are not sure how to help the person who's diagnosed. So we allow that space there for them to discuss that. And then sometimes also either for the client or for the family member, they might be, you know, everybody's minding everybody else. You know, she's having a good day or he's having a good day today. So therefore, I won't sort of say that I'm not feeling great. You know, so in here, an ARC, anybody can come in to me and they don't have to mind me and they don't have to mind any of the therapists here. They just have to have that space to know that it's safe, it's very confidential, and it's their space to say what it's really like for them. And that can be a family member or it can be the diagnosed person.
And I presume the support changes through the various stages, because there are many stages to a cancer journey, aren't there? From perhaps the illness or, you know, the diagnosis that may have been a shock, to the treatment, to the aftermath. Like there are many stages along the way.
There are. And of course, everybody's cancer experience or journey, if you like, is unique. So, yes, as I had said, the shock at the beginning and how to cope with all the treatment and how to, you know, manage the life changes that it can bring. And they might be short term life changes because it might be a year of treatment or it might be 6 months or 3 months. It varies all the time. So it's kind of supporting the person to get to that place of acceptance of where they are, which is very, very difficult. And it's a real challenge. And I understand that. And it's just as the journey goes on and the different stages go on, it's helping them to be where they are now. You know, this is where we're dealing with now. So let's try and deal with this today and see how best, what you need in that. And we also, and this is not necessarily the case for everybody, but when we have some people that maybe have and are facing an end of life experience, well, then helping them with that as well. But that, you know, that having a cancer diagnosis doesn't mean that that's going to happen. But if it is the case for some people, then we are here to help them through that as well. So there's lots of different stages, as you say, to it.
That is tough work, Virginia, but I assume it's very rewarding, which is why you chose to specialise in this area. You know, that every client you now see has a cancer story or journey.
It is. I mean, I'm a professional musician, so I started off then as working with people with performance anxiety, because that was a special interest to me, and that was what my degree was based on. But I did my placement at ARC, and then as doing a thesis, you have to do a placement. So I did a placement at ARC. And was so struck and found it such a privilege to deal with people that are going through this experience. And, you know, yes, it is hard work, but it's immensely rewarding. It is immensely, it's an honor, really, I could say, because I have wonderful people coming through the door and I meet people from all walks of life. And, you know, it's just something I love doing. And I'm here in ARC on a Thursday working with these people and hopefully making a difference to how they navigate their way through this.
And I think we've come a long way in this country with how we view therapy, that it's not just something fluffy that the Americans do, that, you know, you're speaking with a professional. And it's really important that we look after our health, mind, body and soul. But I think there'll be some people who think, well, what's the point in talking about it? I still have to deal with it. But how important is it that you take time to work through this with someone objective, impartial and professional?
It's very, very important, because if you are, say, you know, I have to get on with it, so therefore I'm not going to deal with how I feel about it. You know, you have to allow the emotions to come up and have a space to allow the emotions to come up. And that goes for family members as well, because, you know, I would say to people, if there's somebody with a diagnosis, it's also the people around them that are kind of caring for them or trying to support them or whatever. They need support as well. And that's why it's so important. But I think people find it very, very helpful to sit in a safe space and talk about it. And some people who maybe don't do feelings so easily, and it's not for everybody, you know, therapy is not for everybody. And I wouldn't be pushing people into therapy unless they felt that they wanted to come in and maybe just talk. Some people just come in for one session just to talk about how they're navigating all their treatment and everything. Others want to stay and want to explore it further, or to you know, have that space just to talk emotionally. And it really depends on the person. And for me, I will take every person that's coming into the room where they're at, and I meet that person where they're at. So nobody's trying to push anything on anybody here, or you should do a certain amount of sessions or anything like that. It's just what you feel yourself. But it's hard to, when you're busy doing all the treatment and when you're busy trying to cope, and with families and things like that, you know, it's hard to, sometimes it's just difficult to say, how am I feeling about this? And yes, I have to get on with it, but is there any way, if I'm feeling grief or if I'm feeling a sadness or if I'm feeling lonely or if I'm feeling upset, is there any way that I can maybe help to ease that? And that's what we're here to do.
And are there right or wrong things we can say to people on a cancer journey? I mean, sometimes we can have a response that is like, look, you know, look on the bright side. It could be worse. You're going to get through it. Is it important that we sit with people and acknowledge the toughness of a situation?
I think it is, because sometimes people say to me, you know, I wish people would stop telling me to be positive. Now, yes, it is important, and it depends on the personality. Your personality doesn't change because you have a cancer diagnosis. And the personalities of people around you doesn't change because you have a cancer diagnosis. But I think when some people say, look, be positive, or you're so strong. That's why it's great here for people to come in here to ARC and say, I'm not strong. And actually, today I'm not positive. And we sit with that. So, you know, I think it's just checking in with the person. How are you feeling and what do you need? I don't know what I need. Okay, let's just maybe sit with that. But for people, you know, supporting and friends and people, just saying, you know, how are you? Maybe just listening to that. And if the person says, I'm doing okay today, I don't want to talk about it. Okay. It's meeting them where they're at. But it is checking in with them. How are you doing? Is there any way that I can help? Is there anything that you need me to do? Allowing them then to say that, rather than you should be this way or you should be that way. Because maybe they can't be at that point in time.
Yeah, it's good advice.
Make them feel worse.
Even though the intention, of course, is good. I think that's just really, really good advice. Well, there are so many incredible services at ARC Cancer Support Centres, and all services are free to clients. They do have their annual ARC fashion show. It's taking place on Thursday evening next, March 28th in the RDS. And all proceeds go to help ARC fund their services. Tickets cost €65, and you can go to arccancersupport.ie to buy tickets or donate, because it's nice to do something fun, you know, because as you say, we tend to focus on a lot of the negative involved. And, you know, it's nice to bring people together and build community and have a really nice, fun evening. So for more information, again, you can go to arccancersupport.ie. Psychotherapist with ARC, Virginia Kerr, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about your very important work.
Thank you, Claire. It's been a pleasure.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Fiona Brennan is a regular on the show. She's a therapist and a best-selling author. Her latest book, Sleep Well, is released next month. And she is always running events and retreats. You can find out more at thepositivehabit.com. Every month, she joins us to answer one of your issues, which you can always email to us at aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. And everything will remain anonymous, because if you're having an issue, chances are there are plenty of people listening who will benefit from hearing Fiona's advice. And you're very welcome for us, Fiona.
Thank you, Claire. Love to be here.
And here is today's issue. Our emailer says, Dear Fiona, I'm a nurse and I have four kids. I work full time and my two older kids are now in their early 20s. My younger two are 10 and 12. It's safe to say my hands are full. I feel like I'm dragging myself through life, constantly exhausted. I've been reading about people pleasers and I seem to tick all the boxes. However, even though I can see this, I just can't say no to the people I love. I run around like a headless chicken. My sleep is awful and I am so tired. I just don't know how to break the cycle and wish I had more time and energy for my younger kids. Wow. And like she said, tired like so many times, and you can really feel it. And I know, as I said, there's going to be people who identify with this. And, you know, looking at it, a nurse, four kids, she actually doesn't mention a partner. So I don't know if she's doing this on her own.
Yes.
So it would be hard to see how she can change this, because the needs are all going to still be there. The kids are all still going to be there. The jobs are still going to be there and the work is still going to be there. So how is she going to shift her mindset?
Well, change she must, because when I listen to you just saying that, I've read it before, obviously, the listener's question, but when you hear it out loud, it, like, my heart just melts with compassion and empathy for her. Like, it's tiring to just even listen to how someone, as you say, can manage all of those things. Like, it's an awful, awful lot. What's really interesting is that a lot of people pleasers do end up in the caring profession. So a lot of nurses, for example, and I've done a lot of work with nurses, and they tend to be the person in the family that everybody goes to, that they're always organizing, they're always sorting things out for other people, and they tend to be depleted. So the first thing is that, you know, you and I can listen to that and we can feel compassion, but what we really want is for this listener to start to feel self-compassion for themselves and to be able to realize that something, things do need to shift, and there's always things that can be done. I really, truly believe in that. And it's about taking small, small steps to begin with, and then really starting to shift practically and, as you said, from a mindset perspective. Two of those things have to happen. So what I thought would be really helpful, especially for listeners, and just to call it out, Claire, like, people pleasing is probably one of the biggest things that I've seen in my clinic over the last 12 years. Like, it is huge in terms of how many people struggle with this. It's a very real concern. It's also quite insidious, that you're not necessarily sure if you are a people pleaser. You know, it can be quite ambiguous.
Excuse me.
No problem. So what I thought would be really good is if we go through this checklist, and the listener, she seems to have a really good awareness of that. So let's share that with people here today and see if you can identify, do you tick some of these or all of these boxes?
Yeah, because it sounds like people please. You're like, why would you not want to please people? But when you are doing, putting the needs of others before your own constantly, you're depleted and burnout is the risk. So people pleaser sounds nice, but as you said, it can be quite insidious.
Yes, it sounds nice, but it really isn't, because unfortunately, it is never going to, you're not pleasing anybody. That's the reality, right? Because it's what's underneath it, what's causing that. It's not like, it's really important to get that definition between, you know, of course we want to give, you know, you want to be a very giving person who is helping other people. That's not a people pleaser. It's a different thing, right? And that's why it can be so kind of hard to understand, because, like, well, I'm just doing my best to help the people I love. And she says it there herself, you know, I don't want to say no to the people I love. But this is not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is when one person is giving, 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 and they're burning, burning, burning out. That is a lose-lose situation. And if you think about it, even on a logical level, when you keep giving and you eventually get ill, get exhausted, can't work, you become a burden on other people. So it is, you know, you start to become the person that everyone has to look after, because you are so depleted.
And is it a self-esteem issue? Because are you trying to fuel yourself on others appreciating you? And it's like,
yes,
yeah, and it's a destination you never actually arrive at.
Exactly, Claire. And that's why it's so debilitating, so sort of destructive for everybody involved. So if we look at this box ticking, right, let's say the first one, like, and you've hit, you just kind of alluded to it there, it's the constant need for approval. Okay, so this is, you're actually looking for something back. You're helping, but you're needing that sense of being approved of. You have a difficulty saying no. Okay, so as I'm going through this, just start to identify if any of these or all of these relate to you. People pleasers tend to avoid conflict at all costs. They want to keep the peace and they want to keep the other person happy. So they will tend to suppress their own emotion and really struggle to express it. So therefore, they could be harboring so many different emotions and just never, never express it, because the worst thing that they can imagine is any form of conflict. They put other people first, which, as we said, it sounds like a positive thing, but ultimately it isn't, because you cannot, and, you know, I've seen it so often, it is heartbreaking, you cannot give from a place that is empty. It's not really giving, do you know? Yeah.
Can't be to your own detriment.
It's almost like, let's say we both have some water here, so there's enough water for both of us, but let's say there's only one cup and I'm absolutely parched and I give you the water, right? And I'm like, okay, I actually want it myself, but I'm giving it to you. It's not really, there is no grace behind that. And it's like, nobody really feels the pleasure of giving or the warmth of it. There's a sense of like, I'm giving, but I don't have it to give, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not enough there. Thankfully, we both have enough water.
Fine.
Over-apologizing would be another really key thing to notice about yourself. If you keep on, and this, again, very Irish thing, sorry, 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 but noticing, do you always assume that you're in the wrong, right? And then apologize for that. Difficulty expressing true feelings, a sense of holding back on what you really feel and what you want to say because you're so worried about the impact that might have. And essentially what we're looking at here, you know, a lot of these things are leading to a fear of rejection. Deep, deep down, it's a sense of, if I don't please, if I don't make that person happy, then there's the risk of me being isolated and rejected. So I'll keep on giving, giving, giving until I know that I am, that I belong, that I'm accepted. And the problem with that is that a lot of people pleasers tend to attract people who would be on the narcissistic scale. Okay, so that's the kind of perfect, and I've got my you know, fingers in air quotes here, the perfect match, because someone who has narcissistic tendencies, and just to call out, I think we all do have some narcissistic tendencies, and we also all have some you know, people pleasing within us. It's not like it's black and white, but whatever the dominant force, if you like, is a narcissist will be very attracted to a people pleaser because they're going to keep on giving. And the people pleaser will also be attracted to them because they are going to keep on taking and they will never really get that validation back, you know? So it's an unfortunate, really unfortunate vicious cycle. And quite often people pleasers, like, where it's born is in childhood. It's in that early childhood conditioning where maybe there was a parent who might have been slightly narcissistic, a sense of not wanting conflict within the family. If there was a lot of conflict in the family, the child might learn, if I'm a good girl or I'm a good boy, then everything will be okay. Keep mummy happy, keep daddy happy, and keep everything going. So, you know, these behaviours, whether on either side of the scale, are often born in our earlier years. And, you know, it's really worth understanding that, because when you start to understand that about yourself, you can bring compassion to it. You can bring a sense of actually moving forward. So for this lovely lady who is juggling so much, right, I would say that we need to help her, first of all, on a very practical level, to start setting boundaries. People pleasers need boundaries. And that's a word that is kind of bandied around a lot. But really, it's about self-respect. It's about saying, I'm working full time. Okay, so being a nurse is a very demanding job. I'm sure I haven't done it, but I can imagine. You know, they're just
shift hours, and it's giving when you're there.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, on your feet. You know, really, such an important, amazing work to do. But let's say these adult children at home. Right? What's going on there? I'm not sure, but I wonder how much of the load, if you like, the housework is being shared. So I would recommend that she takes the initiative here. And this is like that sense of proactivity for compassion for herself and saying, there's a rota in the house. So when I come home from work, the place isn't like a bombshell and I'm getting dinner ready for everyone, the kids. You know, you need to sort of start to share that load, have a rota, have the adult children helping. And even the younger, like I know they're still very young, 10 and 12, but there's lots of 10 and 12 year olds can do to help around the house.
Yeah.
So start shifting some of that responsibility off and sharing it. You're right. She doesn't mention a partner. If there is one, then, you know, again, they need to be, if they're not already, helping more around the house and taking pressure off her on that really practical level. So that would be the first thing I would say to do. On a psychological level, it's really important to do that deeper work that I mentioned in terms of understanding where this has come from, to understand in herself, what is it that I'm seeking? And it requires quite a lot of courage and honesty with oneself to be able to say, well, yeah, I am looking for validation. And a lot of people pleasers will also feel very resentful. So they don't express this, but they can also be quite prone to the victim mentality. And that takes a lot of honesty about oneself to say, yeah, I am actually constantly, you know, saying, poor me, I'm exhausted, etc. But we need to be accountable for our own lives. So being able to switch it around from difficulty saying no and actually saying, I'm saying yes. It's much more, you know, easy to kind of be at peace with that. I'm saying yes to myself. I'm not saying no to others, but I am saying yes to myself. And that we are all equal, not better or worse than anybody else. So as much as the people you're caring for need and deserve time, space, energy, love, you are absolutely 100% equal to that and deserve that as much as anyone else.
Yeah. And I would suggest as well, taking control of the week a little bit. Now, I'm someone that constantly chases their tail. I completely get it. Juggling the family, the work, all of that. So I yeah, get it. I meet yeah. it with compassion. But sitting down on a Sunday and looking at the working week and farming out a few of the tasks to the others,
yeah,
putting in a bit of time for yourself, whether it's just that self-inquiry time, peaceful time, a walk, a meet with a friend, and time with the kids. What's something fun that you're going to do with the kids? Because we do get stuck in a rut of complaining and I'm always picking up this washing and you do nothing and who did the dishwasher? And like,
yeah,
it's just a self-perpetuating vicious circle that everyone gets stuck in. But with a little bit of control, and we're going to the cinema on Wednesday night, that's going to be lovely.
Yeah.
You start to pat yourself on the back a little bit more rather than putting yourself and everybody down all the time.
That's it, Claire. Yeah, it's kind of tweaking things. And like, I think you're spot on in terms of having these kind of rituals, if you like, where you spend time, fun time with the kids, but also that you carve out and, you know, people say, I just don't have time. It's like, well, you have to literally take it.
Yeah.
No one is going to give it to you. No one is ever going to give it to you. So it's being really devoted to yourself and saying, if it's 10 minutes in the morning where I do my meditation or I just get out into the garden, I get the light in the morning, whatever it might be, that's mine. And it becomes, you become so determined about that. And then that's where self-esteem starts to build up, because you're actually relating to yourself. You're kind of caring for yourself. And that's where shifts start to happen. Small things make a huge, huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, I always say to just say, this is my time, whether it's your cup of tea in the garden or lighting a candle and sitting without the phone for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's so powerful to say, this is my time. So look, we wish you all the best. As I say, I'm sure there are so many people in your boat, but boundaries and backing yourself a little bit, and I've no doubt things can shift. Fiona, you're also shifting. There's a lot going on for you. As I said in the intro, you're releasing a book next month and you have a retreat coming up.
I do. It's the King Coyle Sleep Well Experience and it's on Sunday, the 19th of May in the Avon in Wicklow, which is a lovely venue. I know you've been there, Claire, as well. It's a really nice spot. And yes, tickets are on my website, thepositivehabit.com. And also you can find me on Instagram at thepositivehabit.
Fiona, as ever, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Bipolar Day takes place at the end of the month, March 30th. The global theme this year is bipolar together. As with many conditions, there can be stigma, misunderstanding and othering. With 1 in 50 people in Ireland experiencing a lifetime of bipolar and up to 40 million people worldwide, the aim this year is to highlight that we are all in this together, whether living with or supporting someone. I'm joined in studio by Director of Services at Aware, Stephen McBride, and Arlene Bailey, who lives with bipolar. And you're both very welcome. Arlene, can I start with you? Because your diagnosis came relatively later in life.
It did, yeah. I was actually, it was not too long after my 40th birthday that I was diagnosed. My dad passed away. And I decided at that point, after years of struggling with my mental health, to assume responsibility for whatever was going on with me and seek the necessary help to, you know, determine what exactly was going on with me. Previously, I had been diagnosed with depression, but there was a lot more to it, Claire. I could tell that there was, you know, that there was highs that didn't make sense to me, and that the medication I was given, you know, I wasn't responding well to it. So, yeah, I had to kind of delve further, and I was diagnosed with bipolar two.
And how did you feel when you got that diagnosis? Did you have any sort of conceptions or misconceptions about bipolar and what it was?
I had my suspicions on the run up to the diagnosis because it had been mentioned by the psychiatrist I was dealing with. And I suppose it was a mixed bag of emotions at the time, because in one way it was relief and in another way it was really upsetting to be told. You know, my initial thought was, how are people going to respond to this? Are people going to judge me? You know, with there being at times a lack of awareness around certain mental health issues, people can have an element of fear when you know, presented with something like this. So it took a bit of courage on my part as well, I think. And, you know, I had to educate people as well and myself as I went along. But I have a great support system in place. I have a wonderful husband who has been there for me through thick and thin. And my family are on board and have done their research, and, you know, they know me as a person, so they understand when I'm in a certain kind of, if my mood is kind of elevated or a little low, they get it. And, you know, it's great to have that behind you.
And what is life with bipolar disorder like then? You mentioned some highs and lows.
Yeah.
So what can go on?
In general, Claire, life is great. You know, I mean, awareness is a wonderful thing. So now that I know what's going on, I have been treated accordingly in terms of medication, and I've sought out the likes of the services that Aware offer. I've done a program with them there recently, which was immensely helpful. Occasionally, I would have therapy sessions if I felt like I needed it. But like, I'm very kind of level, you know what I mean, at the moment, and it's great. But because of the fact that I'm taking the appropriate medication, it's sort of, you know, like, my highs would never be as high as they were before, and the lows are not that low. And when I'm going through one or the other, I know that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I know it's going to be short-lived, and it just, you just ride the wave, basically.
Yeah, and I suppose even to be able to say, oh, this is my bipolar, rather than, what's wrong with me? Why can't I, you know, react X, Y, Z? Why is this happening to me? It's a different mindset, isn't
yeah,
it, to label it?
It was an amazing thing in that sense to know that there was a label for it, and that it wasn't just sheer lunacy on my part that I'd find myself painting the walls at 4 o'clock in the morning, or as I jokingly refer to the time I broke into my sister's house to clean it just because I had all this energy and I didn't know what to do with it. It was great to actually be able to say, right, that's what it is now. So I know when something goes slightly askew, that's what it is. And, you know, I'm in control in a sense as well, because, as I said, awareness is key.
Well, before you leave today, make sure I give you a key to mine. You can let yourself in at any time.
Absolutely, no problem.
But I get you that there's times, you know, where there's behaviours going on that you don't feel you understand. And to get that level of understanding is really empowering in many ways.
Oh, it is, of course, yeah.
And I was listening to an interview. Now, it was somebody talking about suffering with mental health and having addiction, but he was saying that there was always a sense growing up that he didn't quite fit in or he was out of step with everybody else. And I know that can happen sometimes with depression or mental health issues. And I mentioned that in the introduction, that it's important that we kind of see it that we're all in this together rather than, you know, people living separately.
Of course, because everybody has a story, everybody has something going on, you know, whether it's mental health related or anxiety or whatever it might be, you know, and especially after the fallout from COVID, we have to be a little bit kinder to people, I think, along the way and more mindful of that. So, yeah, we are all in it together. And just, you know, as my dad used to say, it's nice to be nice, you know, so just look out for one another. And, you know, maybe there's somebody out there that has something like this going on that doesn't have the strength right now to speak out. I always use my voice to encourage people to seek help because there is help there. As I said, Aware are phenomenal. They're an amazing service and there are resources in place to help people. So, you know, it's important to ask for the help.
And speaking of using your voice, you're a professional singer and you were in Second Chances on Virgin Media TV. I saw your episode.
Yeah.
And you have had great success. I mean, you've even found a husband through the music industry.
Absolutely.
As well as working in it and earning a living from it. But do you feel your long journey to get your diagnosis held you back from other success you may have had?
I think so, yeah. I mean, obviously there were other factors involved, but it definitely played a part. I mean, I would have jeopardized certain opportunities that came my way because I would have gone into lockdown mode or whatever because of my mental health. So, yeah, I obviously wasn't being treated for that at the time. So it was going to render me kind of unreliable at times for certain jobs. So, yeah, but I'm in a great place now, Claire. I mean, I'm powering through. I'm having fun with it. There are little rules with the music business. I think, you know what, if you want to do something, if you want to perform here, there, wherever, just play. I think as adults, we forget to play. And that's, you know, that's vitally important as well. We're not here for a very long time. So, to, you know, get out and enjoy life while we can, no matter what's going on up here or, you know,
yeah,
physically, you know, it's, yeah.
And looking forward and not looking back. And I love that and being happy with exactly where you're at now. And I think it's important for people to hear that you're happy, you're content, you're in a good place, you have a good life, you have good relationships, you have work. Because I think we think if we hear of a mental illness or a diagnosis that it means you're going to be living very differently to everybody else. And that's,
yeah,
not necessarily true.
I'm proof that there is light at the end of the tunnel, I think. You know, I've been at the very bottom. I have been the lowest I could possibly be. I had made attempts on my life in the past. And that's never going to happen again because, you know, as I said, I've assumed responsibility. I know what's going on with me. And, you know, I'm only planning on going up from here, Claire.
Yes. Well, you're an absolute superhero. It's a pleasure to be in your company. I must say, you're like radiating joy and positivity and light, a perfect spokesperson. And, you know, I have to say, I want to bring you in, Director of Services, Stephen McBride. When I was contacted to cover this piece, like there was a whole range of people you had from all different walks of life who could have come to represent living with bipolar. And I think it's amazing that we're at this point that people feel comfortable, like Arlene, to say, this is me, this is my life, this is my experience.
Absolutely, Claire. We're delighted to have people coming forward like Arlene. And it's a privilege to hear Arlene speak so eloquently and openly about her experience of living well with bipolar disorder. So to have someone like Arlene and all the other participants in our Living Well with Bipolar Disorder programme speak about it and engage in the programme and know that you can live well and manage the condition effectively, because we're also very cognizant that it is a serious mental health condition and a mood-related disorder that needs the adequate treatment, which is provided through medication and also accessing supports from maybe a mental health team and also our Aware programme.
Yeah, so you have to be in a place where you feel you can ask for help, ask for support, and there's a level of understanding there. Tell us a little bit about the Living Well with Bipolar program.
Yeah. So our Living Well with Bipolar Disorder program is an 8-week program, 90 minutes per session, and it covers a variety of different topics from the causes and the course of bipolar disorder, which means what can lead to it, how to manage it effectively. And really the main part of the program is to try and understand in, you know, the facilitative workshops that we have, that people can live well with it, and exploring the different tools and techniques and ideas that come up in the shared discussion between the participants about living well with bipolar. You know, so people come from being recently diagnosed, some people participate who have a long-standing diagnosis. So there's a mixed group of people in the programme, you know, that come together and speak about the impact of bipolar on their lives. And that kind of shared experience of understanding of what it's like to be in a group where other people are living with the same condition is really, really powerful.
Yeah, and Arlene mentioned she already did one of the courses, and you have many for people going through a diagnosis or their loved ones. And I think that's really important that all those resources are made available for free. I'm conscious there might be people listening who are thinking, oh, that sounds a little bit like me or somebody I know. And understandably and correctly, we hear a lot of negativity around mental health supports, that the wait lists are long, that it's under-resourced and underfunded. And that is true. But there is support there. I don't think people should be put off reaching out for help.
Absolutely not, Claire. You know, we're delighted to say that we really strive to reduce barriers for people accessing care. You know, we don't operate any waiting list system. So if a person is seeking help and wants to register or come forward to take part in the Living Well with Bipolar Disorder program, or our Relatives and Friends program, which is a program for people who are in a relationship with or a loved one or a supporter of someone with bipolar, we're very much open to having that conversation with them and registering them on the programme, you know. So there are no waiting lists in relation to the support that people can access at AWARE.
What do we know about causes, or is it different for everybody?
It's different for everybody, you know. The symptoms and signs of bipolar disorder can emerge early on in life, you know, generally speaking in late adolescence or early adulthood. And it can take a while for a diagnosis of bipolar disorder to be made, you know. And generally speaking, that we encourage people who may be exhibiting signs of elation, as Arlene mentioned, or being high, you know, and having that boundless energy. And that may not be seen by the person themselves. It's often a loved one or a family member who notices those periods of elation. And if someone's experiencing that, and bipolar disorder is that idea of experiencing those times of elation and also periods of low mood, which makes the diagnosis of bipolar disorder, that it's the two poles. So if you're exhibiting signs or symptoms of that, whether it's a movement between low mood or even that elated mood, we really encourage people to reach out for help. And generally speaking, the first port of call is someone's GP.
Yes, brilliant. And there is lots of resources and information at aware.ie. Before I let you go, Arlene, where can people find your music?
So I'm on Instagram, Arlene Bailey Singer, Facebook, Arlene Bailey. And then my band, we're called Bailey. So we can be found on Facebook and all the normal platforms. Our stuff is released on Spotify and iTunes. And
brilliant. Well, I can only recommend that you get yourself in front of this ray of light, because you absolutely beam. Arlene Bailey, thank you so much for coming on to share your lived experience of bipolar disorder, and Director of Services at AWARE, Stephen McBride. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Claire.
Thanks, Claire.
For more information, visit aware.ie. And Arlene, thank you very much. I hope people will log on and hear your music. So that's it for Live and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey, and Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks as ever to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.